Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are taking on something we all use, like constantly, but maybe don't fully grasp, the internet. We're doing a deep dive into Russell Newman's really foundational book, The Internet. I think it honestly promises to change how you look at your phone, probably forever.
Yeah, it's such a crucial read. I mean, the core idea is that the internet isn't just, you know, another app or a tool.
Right.
It's this profound social phenomenon. A shift, Newman compares to things like the printing press or the Industrial Revolution. It's really reshaping identity, community, even global power dynamic.
Absolutely. And so our mission here for this deep dive is pretty clear. We need to try and move beyond being just passive users to kind of shed that comforting myth of the cloud, which we'll get into, and become more like critical digital citizens.
Yeah, exactly. And Newman's framework for that is viewing the internet as a, what do you call it, a socio-technical assemblage.
Okay, that seems a bit academic, maybe.
It does. It sounds jargony, but it's just a way of saying the technology doesn't exist on its own, right? It's tangled up with hardware, laws, business models, culture, all of it.
The messy stuff.
The messy human stuff. And to get it, you have to look past the screen and ask, you know, who's actually controlling things? Who's pulling the levers?
And guiding us through this necessary complexity is Russell Newman. He's an associate professor of media and communication at Emerson College. And his viewpoint is, well, it's wonderfully interdisciplinary.
Yeah, he brings together sociology, media studies, digital culture.
Yeah.
It gives you this unique lens. And what I think makes him stand out is he avoids the extremes.
Right.
Like, he's not a starry-eyed techno-utopian saying tech will save us all.
Right.
Nor is he a complete techno-pessimist saying we're all doomed.
Okay, so a more balanced critical view.
Exactly. He's a critical media scholar. He's focused on explaining why the internet works the way it does. He digs into the underlying economics, the policy choices, the power structures behind it all, not just the tech itself.
Which takes us straight to the book's main argument, though.
Which is that the internet is not neutral. It's not just a tool sitting there. It's a place of constant negotiation, conflict even.
So this idea of technological determinism, that the tech itself drives change, that's flawed.
That's what he argues, yeah.
Yeah.
It misses the human element, the politics, the economics, shaping our digital world.
So to give us that context, he goes back to the beginning, right? The origins.
He does. He traces the shift from the early days.
Yeah.
ARPANET, academic, military roots, designed to be non-commercial, decentralized. Mm-hmm. That was the initial dream, you could say.
The dream. Okay. And when did that change?
Well, the dream kind of hit reality in the mid-1990s. That was the pivotal moment of privatization and commercialization. That's when the floodgates opened. And the sort of core conflict we're still dealing with was set up. That original promise of an open network versus, well, the reality now of these big closed commercial platforms.
Okay. So to help us unpack that conflict, the book is structured pretty logically.
Very. It systematically dissects the whole internet stack, as he calls it. Starts with the physical stuff, the material layer.
The tables and servers.
Exactly. Then moves up to the economic logic, how it makes money. And finally, lands on the really thorny issue of governance. Who makes the rules?
And the aim is to give us the tools to understand things like, you know, net neutrality debates, privacy issues, why people want to regulate big tech.
Precisely. It's about being an informed participant, not just a user sucked along by it all.
Yeah, let's start right at the bottom then, the physical layer. This is where he really tackles that cloud idea.
Yeah, he absolutely shatters the myth of the immaterial cloud. We talk about uploading to the cloud, but what does that actually physically mean?
Okay, what does it mean?
It means massive, tangible infrastructure, huge, energy-guzzling data centers, and maybe most importantly, these transoceanic fiber optic cables. 99% of international data travels through these underwater cables.
Wow, 99%.
And the key insight, the really shocking part, is that this infrastructure is inherently political.
So the cloud is actually a bunch of servers in a building somewhere connected by huge underwater cables. Just saying it like that feels different.
It does. And Newman stresses that because ownership of this stuff is concentrated and because the cables and data centers exist in physical locations, they are subject to national laws, to surveillance, to geopolitical fights.
Right. Control the physical point where the cable lands or demand data be stored within your borders.
And you have real political and surveillance power. control the cables, you control the flow of information. It's quite stark when you think about it physically.
Okay. So once we accept this physical reality, the next question is obvious. How does money get made from all this?
Which brings us neatly to the political economy chapter, and the big one. Surveillance capitalism.
This is the if it's free, you're the product idea, right?
Basically, yes. That's the core realization. If the service seems free, think Google search, Facebook, Instagram, then you, or rather your data and attention, are the actual product being sold.
How does that work exactly?
Well, the platforms relentlessly track everything. Every click, every search, how long you pause on a picture. They aggregate all this activity to build incredibly detailed behavioral profiles.
And those profiles are gold dust for advertisers.
Exactly. They're sold for highly targeted advertising. It fundamentally commodifies our social interactions, our connections, and crucially, our attention.
And that profit motive, based on capturing our attention and data, must surely affect how we behave online.
Absolutely. Which leads perfectly into the discussion on identity and culture. If the platforms are designed to maximize engagement to harvest more data, well, how does that shape how we present ourselves?
Newman's take is interesting here. He says online identity isn't like a lesser version of real identity.
Right. He calls it a different mode of being authentic. But, and this is key, it comes with this massive blurring of boundaries, public, private. It all gets mixed up, potentially visible, potentially monetizable.
And it leads to this concept of the prosumer.
Yeah, the producer consumer. We consume the service, but we also produce the content, the posts, the pictures, the data that makes the service valuable.
But the kind of sharper point he makes is that we're essentially doing unpaid labor, right? We're generating the economic value for the platform. We're building their products, our data for free.
Precisely. It reframes content creation significantly.
And of course, the internet isn't just about identity or economics. It's a massive political force, too. It seems to have this dual role.
Definitely. On one side, you see it as a tool for liberation, for democratic organizing. Think about movements like the Arab Spring or hashtag Black Lives Matter. It offers ways to bypass traditional media state control.
A genuine force for change, potentially.
Potentially. But then there's the other side. It's an incredibly powerful tool for control. State surveillance, diabolically. The Snowden leaks show the scale of that. And censorship, think of China's Great Firewall. This leads towards what Newman terms the splinter net, a fragmented internet based on national borders and controls.
So you have liberation versus control playing out constantly, which makes governing this whole thing tricky.
Incredibly tricky. Who writes the rules for something that's inherently global, borderless? Newman dives into the complex multi-stakeholder model. You have groups like ICANN managing domain names, the IETF setting technical standards.
The techie groups.
Yeah, the engineers trying to keep the pipes working. But these groups are under enormous pressure.
From who?
From the giant tech platforms who basically act as private regulators through their terms of service. They decide what's allowed on their massive spaces. And from national governments pushing for more control, for data localization, for digital sovereignty. It's a real political tug of war.
Okay, so we've covered the physical stuff, the money, the culture, the politics. If you had to boil it down, what are the absolute key themes someone should walk away with?
I think the first, maybe the most fundamental, is smashing the myth of technological neutrality.
Meaning tech isn't just neutral tools.
Exactly. The book argues really forcefully that every choice, platform design, the algorithm, the protocols, it's all embedded with political and economic values. It's not just math. It's ideology coded into the system.
So understanding that an algorithm isn't just objective code, but a choice someone made, that changes how you see your feed, right?
Totally. It reveals the power embedded in the design itself.
Okay, theme number one, nothing is neutral. What's next?
Theme two is this deep historical irony from decentralization to recentralization.
You mentioned the early internet was designed to be decentralized.
Right. Built for resilience. No single point of failure. That was the whole point after, you know, fears during the Cold War. But now the vast majority of our online life flows through just a handful of giant corporations. Google, Meta, Amazon, Apple. They've become the new gatekeepers.
So this concentration of power makes the internet fragile in a new way, a corporate fragility.
In a way, yes. It creates choke points for control, for economic power, for shaping public discourse. That feeling many of us have of being sort of stuck using just a few main services really illustrates this recentralization.
Okay, and a third key theme.
Digital inequality. This is crucial. It's not just about whether you have a phone or internet access and the digital divide, as we used to call it.
It's more nuanced than that.
Much more. It's about the capacity to participate meaningfully. Do you have the skills, the digital literacy, the social connections online to actually leverage the internet effectively?
And as everything moves online, jobs, education, healthcare.
Exactly. As digital life becomes less optional and more mandatory, that gap in meaningful participation becomes a really critical social justice issue. It's about equity, not just access.
Those are powerful takeaways. The book also has some really quotable lines that seem to capture these big ideas.
It does. Newman has a way of phrasing things that sticks with you, like on the power of platforms.
Is this the one about shaping connections?
Yeah. Digital platforms don't simply connect people. They actively shape the nature of those connections through their design, policies, and algorithms.
So power resides in the design. The architecture shapes the interaction.
Precisely. If the design rewards outrage, guess what you'll get more of? Outrage.
And there's that paradox about culture, too.
Right. The internet has democratized cultural production while simultaneously creating new gatekeepers and forms of exclusion.
So anyone can post, technically.
But whether anyone sees it is often down to an algorithm, a new kind of gatekeeper. The editor's role hasn't vanished. It's just morphed into the curator, the algorithm.
And maybe the most direct quote about the stakes involved.
I think it's this one. The battle for the future of the internet is a political struggle over fundamental values. Privacy versus security, openness versus control, and public interest versus private profit.
That really frames it as an ongoing political project, not a finished technological product.
Exactly. It's a call for engagement, really.
Yeah.
Which leads us to, okay, how can you, the listener, actually apply all this?
Right. The practical side. What can we do with this knowledge?
Well, first off, it massively boosts your personal digital literacy and self-awareness. Just understanding surveillance capitalism, for example, should motivate some conscious choices.
Like what? Using privacy-focused browsers, maybe? Being more careful about app permissions?
Yeah. Questioning default settings. Thinking critically about what data you're sharing and why. Developing healthier boundaries, maybe, between online and offline life. Recognizing your data has value.
Okay, so more conscious personal use. What else?
Second, it equips you for informed civic engagement. These issues, net neutrality, data privacy laws, antitrust action against big tech, they aren't just abstract policy debates.
They're battles over those fundamental values Newman mentioned.
Exactly. So having this framework helps you understand the stakes. You can move beyond just reacting to headlines and actually engage, maybe even advocate, because you understand the underlying structures Newman lays out.
It empowers you to participate in shaping that future.
That's the idea.
For me, the biggest takeaway, the thing that really shifted my perspective, was that move Newman forces you to make. Seeing the internet not as just a tool, but as this contested, human-made system, realizing it's political and its future is still up for grabs, being decided by policy choices, by us, not just by code.
Yeah, that's huge. And for me, I keep coming back to the sheer materiality of it all.
The cables.
The cables. Shattering that fluffy cloud idea and grounding it in physical geography and server farms and those underwater lines, realizing that's where real geopolitical power lies. It just makes the whole thing feel so much more tangible and, frankly, more urgent.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ocotra Foundation.